One True Thing by Welcoming Disaster, read by Cookie Mom 6067. Captain America, Tony has long learned, lives by a set of internal rules so convoluted and esoteric that he himself sometimes gets lost in them. There's the obvious, ladies first, except in combat. Don't hit a woman, though in combat situations feel absolutely free to shoot one. Sex with Tony after combat isn't gay, it's team bonding. And sex in Steve's crummy apartment is somehow less gay than sex in Tony's plush bed. He's all right with getting married, as long as they find a church to do it in, but refuses to wear an engagement ring, which would apparently be gay. These rules, for the most part, bother Tony less than they probably should. For one, Steve Rogers lives by them far less than Captain America does. One is a historical fiction, after all, and the other only human. Sometimes, too, he delights in pushing back against them, lives to coax Steve out of his comfort zone. It's a delicate, touchy thing for both of them, exhilarating and frustrating in equal measure. There's one rule, though, that Tony would pay quite a lot of money to be rid of. If Steve is still standing, he won't go to Med. Seriously, Tony says, this isn't normal. We need someone to get a look at you. They'd spent the past week tracking down some cult in New England which claimed to be capable of black magic. Though Tony had initially dismissed it as either mutant powers or chemical weapons, he's beginning to believe their claims. Just as they'd rounded up the last of the group, Cap had been hit with a blast of something green and strangely lemon-scented. He'd refused to even be checked out. Now, with both of them changed into civilian clothes and sitting comfortably on Tony's ugly yellow living room couches, Tony is beginning to think they might have a problem. It's fine, Steve says, waving him off. It doesn't hurt that much. Another long, thin welt forms over the line of his bicep, just over the two Tony has just bandaged up. Tony winces at the depth. They always come right after you've said something, he points out. If you don't go to Med, you have to shut up. Make me, Steve says, without much heat. The lazy, take it or leave it, innuendo that's so rare with him. Tony rolls his eyes and play-acts wrapping the bandages over his mouth instead of his arm. He'll give it some time, he decides, see if the effect wears off or if Steve gets desperate enough to follow his advice. He knows their people are interrogating the captured coven, and he's made sure what the hell did you hit Cap with is at the top of the list of questions. If it's serious, he hopes to know sooner rather than later. Takes it out of you, Tony complains, putting the bandages back into the first aid kit and his feet up on the couch. Think there's still swamp water in the boots of the armor? You're all tense, Steve says, reaching a hand over to squeeze Tony's side. Still cold? Something like that. He allows himself to be pulled under Steve's heavy, muscled arm, leans into his side. Steve picks the channel. He's the one in this partnership with strong opinions on late-night TV. And for a while, they settle into comfortable, tired silence. Tony doesn't quite sleep. He's still too tightly wound, too worried about any possible complications of whatever Steve had been hit with, but he drifts. This, to Tony Stark, should feel, at best, trite, and at worst, mind-numbingly boring. Steve had bored Janet, for God's sake, and Tony is known for having a new girl in his bed every night. Instead, he feels a tiny thrill of belonging, snug as Steve's arm around his shoulders. Steve is a man he rarely feels the need to impress, a man about as disinterested in the monetary upsides of dating a billionaire as humanly possible, a man who's seen Tony at both his worst and his best. He's reliable, constant, in a world that's anything but. If Tony's a little bit in love with him, if sometimes the rare boyish grin leaves him lightheaded, if he started saving notes Steve leaves him, if they so much as hint at affection, last night was nice, gone for lunch with B&G, looking forward to dinner, SR. If he's at the point of being able to picture Steve's body the moment he closes his eyes, that's his own problem. He doesn't expect much from Steve. He knows what they have isn't exactly love. Steve couldn't love a man, not in the same way he's always expected to love a woman. He'd grown up dreaming of the apple pie life with Gail. Tony's world can leave him feeling cold and lonely. Tony himself will be gone in a matter of years, if not months. He can't ask much of Steve. Tony's hand slips sleepily down Steve's side and onto his lap, resting just over his groin. Steve hums and turns to look at him, having misread the gesture. "You want me to suck your dick?" he asks, the obscenity as casual as a request for popcorn. "Nice and easy. You can lie back." Tony shakes his head, exhausted. "I don't want your magic germs all over my family jewels, Cap." "Fine by me," Steve says. The relative comfort of the scene is interrupted by the long, deep cut that opens up suddenly on Steve's chest, staining his shirt red. Tony jolts up, suddenly very awake. "It's fine," Steve says quickly. A second cut follows the first, crisscrossing it, and Tony sees Steve wince in pain, several shades paler than he'd been a moment before. "Christ, darling, take that off," Tony says, reaching for the buttons of Steve's shirt. These are deeper. Tony sees a sliver of rib bone where the cuts intersect. Steve hisses out of breath as Tony presses a medical sponge to the wound, squeezing his eyes shut. "I don't know what triggered that one," he complains. "What'd I say?" "You said you were fine. Twice," Tony says, frowning. "I think that's what you said last time, too." "Huh," says Steve, then grimaces and tries. "I'm fine." Tony winces, waits. Nothing happens. "Let me patch you up," he says, pushing Steve's shirt all the way off his shoulders. The sleepiness is gone, replaced with a deep, thrumming anxiety. Tony wraps the bandage around Steve's ribs and lets his hands linger on Steve's pecs, feeling the steady beat of his heart, freakishly low. As Steve is prone to do, he misinterprets and leans down for a kiss. It's too sweet for Tony to turn him away again. He catches Steve by the chin and kisses him back, soft and slow. It's worth it to feel Steve solid and responsive under his touch. "You keep quiet now," he says, pulling back. "Don't ruin the mood by bleeding all over the place." Steve hums something that could be protest or assent, a short, amused humph, and pulls Tony by the hand into the bedroom. He's the one in this partnership who cares about keeping Tony's couches clean. He stays dutifully silent as Tony pulls him forward to straddle his lap, working Tony out of his clothes with deft, quick fingers. He's relieved, Tony thinks, amused by the thought, maybe a little anxious. "I don't think we're actually at risk of magic STDs," Tony says, and Steve huffs. "Ah, shut it. You shut it. You're the one cursed." Steve makes a show of rolling his eyes, but when it comes down to it, he's good with orders. He finds something better to do with that mouth quickly enough, trailing messy kisses down Tony's neck. Tony tangles a hand in the soft hair on the back of his head, stopping him before he gets all the way down. "Here, darling," he says, passing him the lube bottle. "You know what to do." Steve doesn't. He glances between the two of them, caught between two options, and Tony decides to play nice and give him a hint. "I'm already sore." He kind of misses the sass he knows Steve would give back. Could have just said that, he imagines, or perhaps, what a surprise, I'm doing all the work. But watching Steve prepare himself is distraction enough. He's businesslike about it, quick. He doesn't waste time faking anything, which makes whatever emotion Tony can catch feel precious. There it is, just briefly. Steve's eyes shut in stinging pain pleasure, the corners of his mouth tightening. Someday he's going to make Steve slow down. Watch him take his sweet time with himself. Tonight, he only wants to get close, to feel Steve's body over him and around him, taking him in. Steve knee-walks forward, a tiny, delicate little step that seems almost comical to Tony, his face screwed up in concentration. Tony sits up slightly on his elbows, watching him through his eyelashes. His dick responds automatically to Steve's hand, hardening under the familiar touch of his firm, calloused fingers. Steve knows exactly how he likes it, and he throws his head back, muttering an appreciative, "There you are, darling," as Steve strokes him to full mast. Steve braces himself with a hand on Tony's hip as he lines Tony up and sinks down. And Tony once more watches his face. It's brief. Steve's eyes flutter shut as though to brace himself as he pushes Tony's cock head into his rim. And then Tony feels as much as sees that Steve forces himself to loosen up, relaxing each muscle in turn. It's careful, deliberate. He feels himself, adjusts, and then sinks all the way down, suddenly so hot and tight around Tony that he can't help a startled moan. It shouldn't be sexy. It's certainly not what Tony's used to in bed. He'd probably hear more out of Natasha in one night than he'd heard of Steve in their entire relationship. But Tony finds it honest, charming. He's the object of Steve's single-minded concentration. His pleasure, Steve's objective. It's enough to go to a guy's head. "Show me." Tony inhales sharply as Steve rolls his hips, feeling out his new position. "Show me what those thighs are good for, soldier." Steve stays silent for the rest of the night, and Tony murmurs aimless, senseless compliments, his hands alternately in Steve's hair and on his thighs. By the end, Tony's once more on the edge of sleep, his body objecting to being kept awake for any reason. He thinks Steve even tires himself out by the time they're done. He just uses the bedsheet to wipe them off and collapses on top of Tony, his arms slung heavily over his waist. Tony's so close to sleep, he could imagine he dreams the "love you" that Steve mutters into his hair. Tony's phone rings around 3 a.m, waking both of them. Steve's the one who sprints to get it from the living room. Tony yawns twice and pulls himself up to sit against the headboard, still feeling dazed as he answers, "Hello?" "Well, Gandalf cracked." The voice is familiar, though Tony can't assign a name to it. One of the techs they'd left their perps with. "Showed us the wand they'd been using on your guys and everything." "Oh, joy," Tony says, though the relief is overwhelming. "He say anything about Cap?" "Yeah, it's an interrogation spell. I think they fired it by accident. It's designed for torture." Tony very much does not like the sound of that. "What's it do?" "Anytime he lies or misrepresents what he believes to be the truth, it'll hurt him," the text says. "Good news is it'll wear off in 48 hours, so if our good captain can stay honest that long." "Yeah," Tony says. "No, that's adding up. Good work." He makes a mental note to find out the man's name and give him a raise and hangs up without saying goodbye. "So," he says, turning to Steve, "it cuts you when you lie." "Oh," Steve says, "do I lie that much?" "Let's see," Tony says, racking his brain to remember. "You were fine, fine, and fine last night." Steve shrugs, looking almost sheepish. "It'll be over in 48 hours, Tony tells him. "Try to avoid telling me how you're feeling." Steve yawns and reaches over to turn off the light, pulling Tony over to cuddle up. "Yeah, okay." For a moment, both of them are silent. They could drift back off to sleep like this, never mention it again. Tony seriously considers it, but something catches his attention, and he frowns. "Did you want to suck my dick so badly last night?" he asks, remembering the "fine by me." "What was that about?" At first, listening to Steve breathe next to him, he thinks Steve is about to pretend to be asleep, that he won't answer this one. When Steve speaks, his voice is quiet. "Just wanted you to want me," he says, "Saul." No new cuts appear. Tony wonders how carefully Steve had been choosing his words. If he was a braver man, he'd ask about the mumbled confession in the dark, the two words he's still not sure he heard. If he was a braver man, he'd let himself hope, knowing he was setting himself up for disappointment, that Steve had been dreaming, even if Tony hadn't, that he must have imagined someone else. If he was a braver man, he'd take the spell as a cue to try his luck. Instead, he just turns over and presses his face against Steve's bandaged skin, feeling his chest rise and fall under his forehead. This, he tells himself, should be enough. The end.